Welcome to the AV Podcast with Cal C on South Shore AV Radio. To subscribe to the pod and the blog, go to SouthShoreAV.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAV.com. First the Fat Boys break up, then the Fugees break up, and then Golden State's down 3-1 after winning 73 games. Not only that, but after the Raptors showed heart, determination, hustle, and every positive acronym we could mention in Game 3 and Game 4 of their series against Cleveland in the Eastern Conference Finals, then they get mollywopped in Game 5. So basically, the name of today's podcast is called WTF. In other words, what the f is up with all these blowouts? Why the f*** is Golden State down 3-1? And after showing all that heart and determination in games 3 and 4, what the f*** was that I just watched tonight? And more importantly, why did I watch it for so f***ing long? The whole thing's depressing. Let's start the podcast. At this time, I'd like to welcome today's guest to the AV. He's a past contributor to the blog, having helped co-write the 20th anniversary of Midnight Marauders, the classic third album from A Tribe Called Quest. It remains one of the most popular postings in the history of South Shore AV. One of my oldest friends and a lifelong Knicks fan, God bless his soul, he was the 1989 MVP of the legendary Harold Knapper Summer Camp, absolutely killing all things ring toss and potato sack games, and was, trust me, he was the Barry Bonds of soccer baseball, and also was nominated as the most improved player at the Daniel Johnson Outdoor Basketball Runs the week of July 5th, 1994. Anyone who played with corduroy pants on or with Wallabies just straight up got dusted that week. Ladies and gentlemen, listeners of the pod, let's welcome Kevin to the AV. Welcome, sir.
Calvin, you couldn't get some sound effects or some fake applause or something like that?
Not at all. No.
Nothing?
Not even. No.
All right. I'm going to work on my updating my resume there and my Wikipedia page. I got to put some more legendary stuff up there. Thanks for having me, Calvin.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. I'm glad to have you on, brother.
What can I do you for?
Rumor, man. The rumor has it your right leg for soccer baseball was kind of mean, Kev.
It's true, Calvin. But nobody cares about that right now. Nobody's cared about that for like 27 years.
Well, listen. I mean, considering what happened tonight, we should talk about that, shouldn't we?
Let's talk about a kicking of sorts then, yes.
So in the words of Ron Burgundy from Anchorman, that escalated quickly, didn't it? the last I checked, that Cleveland Cavalier and Raptors game, it was 19,000 to 58 in the third quarter. So I think the stats might be a little off, but it was something like that. It was something pretty close to that. I don't know about you, Kev, but I'm sure, like a lot of Raptor fans or just Canadian hoops fans, that basically sucked the air out of the life, basically out of everybody's lungs tonight.
I don't know about that, Calvin. First off, if you want to quote Ron Burgundy, I will quote Maximus Aurelius, and I will ask you, are you not entertained? Are you not entertained? Because Cleveland was most certainly entertained by this whooping that they put on. I got to ask you, though. In your heart of hearts, are you surprised?
Well, I'll tell you what I've been telling a lot of people in the last, I would say the last few months is, sorry, let me rephrase that. I'll tell you what I've been telling people the last few weeks, that all I wanted from the Raptors, especially coming into this series, I just wanted them to play hard and make it a series and make it competitive. just consistently every game, not every other game, not when, you know, you come back across the border to Toronto. I just want to see it every game. Just be consistent. That's all I want to see, because I watched Detroit in the first round give Cleveland everything they had, even though we all know that they weren't good enough to beat Cleveland. But every game except game two of that series was competitive. You know, it basically every game went right down to the last 2 minutes. That's all I wanted to see from Toronto. You know, so after what happened on Saturday and on Victoria Day, you know, you figured that, okay, maybe they're going to come and put some fight in game five. I'm not saying I thought the Raptors are going to win the game now, but all you wanted to see was just some heart and determination, right? So, you know, after the first quarter, we're already down 20. So pretty much from there, we knew what it was after that.
I think the wishful thinking Raptor fan was expecting some sort of fight and effort to come down to the wire, like within 8 points or something along those lines. I didn't mind when it was like, you know, 13-7 because it was early, or 20-14 because at least they have fight. And 2 3-pointers, they can make things interesting. But some sort of 21-4 run at some point, just putting them away. And it just seemed like, I don't know what it is, but the heart is in Canada. The heart is at the ACC. But if you want to talk about consistency, they've been consistently wetting the bed on the road. And right. especially in this Cleveland series. I don't know what it is about Cleveland. I mean, if it were Miami, I'd understand that you had a hard time showing up. You got South Beach. You got a bunch of distractions. This is Cleveland. If it's not like an abandoned factory, you're at the training facility. There's nothing else going on there. Focus on the game. But could it be that they didn't make the proper adjustments?
Well, I'll disagree in this sense that, you know, Cleveland, they do got the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Maybe they got, you know, they're stuck in the Run DMC Museum and got all caught up. You never know.
And maybe I'm a Hall of Fame soccer baseball player.
But, I mean, and it's funny because I had all intentions of jotting down notes throughout this game, right? And here's my notes from the second quarter, Kevin. And I'm not lying. This is what I wrote verbatim. What is Patrick Patterson doing?
Only Patrick Patterson?
Here's my next point. What is Damari Carroll doing?
Getting them checks. Who else?
What are the Raptors doing?
That's more like it.
And then here's my last question. What am I doing? And then I flicked the channel and put it on the weather.
Look, on a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised are you about the result that we got tonight?
I would say about a 6. I don't want to say, I'd say about a 6. And just reason why is just because, again, just from what happened on the weekend, you figure that it's game 5. They've proven to themselves that they can at least take some games from Cleveland. And, you know, they made some adjustments that, you know, made Cleveland feel uncomfortable. So you figure at that point, you figure they would just come and match Cleveland's heart and energy, especially coming back to game 5. So I'm not surprised to say that they lost, but I'm not even surprised necessarily to say that they got blown out per se. But I mean, Kevin, I know I was joking about a couple of minutes ago saying that they're losing by 19,000 points, but I mean, last I checked, they were down by 40, and I don't even know if the third quarter ended. And again, I wasn't even watching at this point. I was just checking the ticker. Like I stopped watching the game pretty much right after the third quarter, like right after the beginning of the third quarter. Once I saw that, well, I mean, you knew after when you're down 30, you know you're probably not going to win. You're not going to have no epic comeback and win the game. But the Raptors have been, if there's anything they've been consistent about, is, as you said, other than wetting the bed, is they've been consistently inconsistent, right? So the whole playoff run, they had Indiana, and that should have been in a lot of cases, we all thought that they might win that series in about 5 games. That took 7. And in some cases, I mean, they almost lost that series. Then you have Miami. They struggled 7 games to beat Miami, even though Miami was missing Whiteside and, you know, Chris Bosh. And we struggled to beat Miami. So I didn't think they were going to come and win this series just because of the fact that you struggled so hard with those two teams. Their playoff record at that point, they're 8-6. Now, what 8-6 team do you think is going to come in now and or basically give Cleveland a real hard challenge after that point, right? Like, the average person would not think that. I think, and you saw it because, especially from the media across the border, everybody felt that was going to be a sweep.
Maybe I have an answer why. This is just another one of my hypotheses. There's 4 teams left, but realistically, 3 out of those 4 teams have championship aspirations.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, you know, the Golden State wants to go back and win the championship. You know, Oklahoma City, Westbrook is just waiting to be unchained. You know, Cleveland's hungry for the championship. Toronto is, I mean, after these performances, Toronto is just there. You know, there's something missing, and it's almost like everybody else has the weight on their shoulders that we have to win a championship. We have to win a championship. We have to gear up towards a championship. It seemed like Toronto's gear or their goal was we have to get out of the first round.
Right.
Okay, well, struggle. Okay, we made it to the first round. Okay, now we got to try and win the second round. Okay, let's try and fight. Okay, it goes to 7. Okay, oh, we just got blown out. Let's try and protect home court. Okay, protect home court. Let's try and protect our home court and win the 2 games. But it's like if you have championship aspirations, and that is a tall task. Granted, we're over 90 games in, especially for Toronto. They're way more than 90 games in, right? But Toronto's more than 90 games in. And are they playing to beat Cleveland and to win a championship? Or are they just trying to save face? Let's try and push it to 6. Let's try. You see, like, your aspiration yourself is just for them to keep it competitive.
Yeah.
You're not saying I want them to beat Cleveland and we'll go on and win the championship, right? All those people at Jurassic Park, do they really, like, do they feel like the Raptors are going to win the championship?
I believe they do. Otherwise, there wouldn't be thousands of people lining up at Jurassic Park hoping that they...
The sober ones, Calvin?
That depends on what the percentage you think that are out there that are sober.
I'm just saying, like, I find there are three out of the 4 teams that have visions of the championship.
No, I totally agree with you with that.
All right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you with that.
All right.
Yeah, they almost have a happy to be there feel. I don't know if it's like I know they're saying that they want to push for, you know, they're shooting for a title. I've heard KC say that, but the way that they're playing, I mean, it's basically a 180. From what he's trying to say, you know, or at least what he's trying to make us believe on this side as fans. Yeah, you just from looking at it, they are just happy to be there, you know. So like I said, 100% I agree with you with that. But for me, as I said again, like I know some people are looking just in talking to some just some friends and like other people and stuff that people are looking at me to make a prediction. And I didn't want to make a prediction because ultimately just from watching the Heat series, I knew either one of those teams were going to lose to Cleveland unless a miracle happened, right? So to me, I just didn't want to see them get skunked. And this is the third time that they've been basically skunked out in this series out of these 5 games. Ironically, all of them on the road, but they haven't even been competitive. So it's funny because all the apologies they've been getting within the last 2 days, you know, and everybody's starting to actually start to question Cleveland a little bit and question LeBron a little bit, and everybody basically apologizing from Jamel Hill and Michael Smith, you know, on his and hers to Stephen A. Smith, you know, there's so much people that's been out there basically apologizing for expecting the Raptors just to curl up and die, you know, and at least they came and they fought for those 2 games. Now, and it's the funny thing because, see, right now Golden State's down 3-1, right?
Yep.
I fully expect Golden State to win tomorrow, right? Now, or sorry, win game 5. So
really?
I do. I'm expecting them to win. Whether that happens, who knows? But I'm expecting them to at least win that game at home.
Did you buy a ticket to Oracle to go see this
No,
game?
I did not, Kevin. I did not. even if the Raptors win Game Six, right? Like even if that actually happens, right? Do you have any faith they're actually gonna not even win Game Seven, but actually even make it competitive after what you just saw tonight, or basically what you just saw from these last three road games?
Raptors are allergic to the road, like Terrence Ross is allergic to the paint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would. You know, again, it just made you feel depressed. Basically, watching them play, like it just I don't know. It was like watching like a boring foreign film movie, you know, and just reading subtitles for like after 30 minutes. You're like, man, you know what? I paid $8 for this, you know. You just want to walk out of the theater. Like, that's how you felt watching this game today, I should say.
You know? Three teams playing for a ring, one playing for respect.
So, in light of that, though, right?
Yep.
How successful do you think this season has been overall, then?
That's probably one of the tougher questions for me to answer right now, given the fact that this loss is so fresh, and I think it was about 38 or 39 points. I would say that it really depends on the outcome of Game 6. I would use Game 6 as my measuring stick of how successful it is. Because if they're going to go out with a fight. But if they go back to Toronto and Cleveland runs roughshod on them, and, you know, for some reason the Cavalier defense is making Kyle Lowry look like he has no idea what to do with the basketball, throwing whip passes into people's legs and, you know, and no one's running back on defense, and people can't hit shots and everything like that, and it's just an embarrassment, forget it. It's still the most successful season, but it's a bitter taste. Like, there's a long way to go. How much fight do they have left? Show me whatever you have left in the tank. If there's something there and there's some semblance of pride, no problem. But if you just go out and you put up another one of these performances, wash. You're not worthy of being in the Eastern Conference Finals.
You're basically Atlanta from last year.
And that would just be a testament of how weak the Eastern Conference is. But that's a subject within itself. It's really like, look, you were the number two seed. Show it. You won over 50 games. Show that you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
But again, yeah. I mean, Golden State won 73 games. They forgot how to play basketball this series too. So
it's been a weird conference finals on both sides, right? Because the amount of blowouts we've seen, you know, in these series, like it's been, I don't want to say it's boring, but at least, okay, the Eastern Conference side has been boring with these blowouts. The Western Conference side, like when Golden State blew out OKC in game two, just because what Curry was doing in that third quarter and just how exciting Golden State can play, it was still entertaining even though they were winning by 20-plus points. And then it wasn't boring in the sense for OKC to blow out Golden State in both these games just because of the shock factor, right? It's not necessarily a surprise per se that Golden State's losing to Oklahoma City just because – you know, I've always believed that OKC has the best talent top to bottom in the league. I just felt that, you know, with Kevin Durant and Russell Westbrook, are they unselfish enough to share that ball with everybody else on the team? You know, and utilize that their whole talent base, right? Instead of trying to, you know, put on their Batman and Superman costumes, you know, and basically try to ISO against the whole world. But in this series, it's like they finally realized that, you know what? In order for us to win, we got to use everybody. And everybody has a responsibility with the ball. And everybody feels like they have a sense of value compared to how the whole season has been so far. Even though they won like 50-plus games, you know, like guys like Ibaka has regressed in a sense, you know. And there's too many games where, well, outside of Philadelphia, they gave up the most fourth-quarter leads in the league this year. To see what they're doing, and not just beating Golden State, but just completely just whooping their ass. I mean, that's the most shocking part. But it's just been a weird conference finals on both sides just because of all the blowouts. Like, it's just weird. You figure it would be more competitive on, you know, just overall as a whole.
What is more surprising to you, the fact that Oklahoma City is up 3-1 or that the Raptors won two games? The Raptors won two out of the first four games.
Ooh, I would say, actually, it's a good question, but I would say actually OKC being up 3-1.
I think there are very few people that forecast that Oklahoma City would be running roughshod over Golden State. You can't tell me as soon as it was 73-9 and everyone was basically doubling down, say, oh, for sure, they're going to win the title. No one's going to stand in their way. It's a sweep. They're going to take care of this, that, and the other. What we're seeing from Oklahoma City is it's jaw-dropping, and it's actually going to be – if it does come to an end tomorrow, which you think it won't, but I'll go on the record right now and say that I think that Oklahoma City shocks Oracle and TNT tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Because you can't tell me that you can't tell me that Russell Westbrook wants to go back to Oklahoma City for another game. You can't tell me that. And yeah, Kevin Durant's there too, and so Steven Adams and everything else like that. But there's something about the way that Oklahoma City is playing. You've seen your fair share of 30 for 30s. Remember the U, Miami University?
Mm-hmm.
How they would just spank people and dance on people and just like be ruthless, relentless,
yeah.
Everything. That's exactly what they're doing. Remorseless. Remorseless. And here's one reason why. Everybody puts Steph on a pedestal. And some people forgot about Dre. Other people forgot about Westbrook. Westbrook didn't forget. He's hungry.
Well, you know, you know what? And it's justified, to be quite honest, Kevin, that Steph Curry was put on the pedestal. We never seen the shit that he did this in NBA history. This guy averaged 30 points a game in 34 minutes. You know, some of the stuff that this guy was doing in games, Kevin, I mean, it was absolutely – all the years I've been watching basketball, I've never seen – anything like that before.
It was pretty.
In my last podcast, I compared him as a cross between Steve Nash and Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, like the best parts of both of those players. That's basically how he treated everybody in the NBA this year. So everything is justified with them, and everything is justified with their season in terms of the regular season, winning 73 games. You had a unanimous MVP, three All-Stars. Like, they're basically like the darlings, the toast of the NBA. So yes, it is to add to basically what we're saying here, that not only is it shocking that, you know, OKC is blowing them out, but you almost have to question, what do you do with this roster for next year with Golden State? As crazy as this sounds, but you know, when you lose, especially in this kind of fashion, you got to kind of start to reevaluate things, right? For example, like, do you bring back Festus Ezeli? Because Festus Ezeli is going to make about $15, $16 million on the open market.
More than Biombo?
He's going to make close to or about the same. He's a good player. You know, like, but do you pay him that? What's going to happen with Harrison Barnes? Do you let him go? Like, do you get rid of some of the older veterans that they have on this team? Like, you know, do you try to maybe find somebody that can maybe score a little bit in the paint? Even though you want to play small ball and you have a set culture and everything else. But it's funny. I'll shout one of my brothers out. We were talking about this morning, and I remember he mentioned this, and it was a great point, that this is a series where they were kind of missing a David Lee. And don't laugh because – no, hold on a second. Let me finish. Don't laugh, because the reason why I'm saying that is because – David Lee, if it's anything that he's great at getting garbage points, right? And he's a great offensive rebounder. He doesn't play defense. But I think in this series, Oklahoma City's length has totally bothered what Golden State wanted to do. And even though they have their lineup of death, as they've been calling it all year, when OKC goes small, they're still big. You know, you still got, even if you put Kevin Durant at the four, he's still 7 feet tall. You got Ibaka, or if you want to put Steven Adams to replace him. They're both, you know, 6'10 to 7 feet tall. Roberson is like 6'7, that type of thing. You know, they
6'7 and unguarded, I might add.
Well, yeah, but be okay. That as it may, just on defense, they're in the passing lanes because they're so long. They're getting every rebound. They're getting every offensive rebound and getting putbacks. But a guy like David Lee, if you throw him in just a few minutes there, he's crashing those boards. You know what I mean? And he's getting some of those little dump off baskets that nobody can seem to make in these last two games in Oklahoma City.
Well, Calvin, I'd give you that argument if David Lee were to come in and average 40 points a game. Because,
well, you know what I mean, though. Like,
he would have exactly helped. Losing.
He would have helped.
There's something amiss. And at what point do you question Steve Kerr's lack of adjustments? Because if he went back to the drawing board after a blowout and got blown out again, erase that chalkboard again. Because something's not right. Do you think that Oklahoma City has out-strategized Golden State to this degree? Or do you think that there's something amiss on Golden State's side? Be it injuries that aren't being disclosed. Maybe Luke Walton's checking out already. Maybe there's some sort of, I don't know. But this is so uncharacteristic. And I'm baffled. Today, everyone's just struggling for answers. Everyone's scrounging for answers. What's going on in Golden State? What's going on in the series? There's no fight. There's no bark. There's nothing.
So I'll say is this. Steve Kerr is getting out coached, plain and simple.
And it's
not surprising. Well, I mean, let's be real. I mean, this is his second year coaching, right? So it's not like he's accumulated years of coaching like a Popovich or Phil Jackson, that type of thing. Like, mind you, yes, he had a very successful season. This is his second year coaching. So even somebody like a Billy Donovan, right? Who, yes, he's a college coach, but this guy's been coaching for 20 plus years. You know what I mean? So yeah, even though it's college, he knows how to diagram plays and, you know, work himself out of situations and different things. Yes, the games are different, of course, from NCAA to the NBA, but he's put in his 10,000 hours of coaching. You know what I mean? Has Steve Kerr done the same? And remember, this is his second year coaching, and he missed half of the year, right? Even though he set the culture and he was there for, you know, behind the scenes and everything else, but almost a novice to this as well. So, you know, he's got a lot to learn as well in this case. He's being out-coached. They're being out everything, you know, at this stage, which is again, it's uncharacteristic, but you're not 100% surprised, just in the sense that, again, and I mentioned this a few minutes ago, that just the talent pool that OKC has, you knew that if they would have clicked, especially early in the season, that could have been a third 60-win team in the Western Conference, really and truly, right?
Yet you still believe that Golden State is going to win the game tomorrow?
Yeah, I don't think that's a mind blowing, you know, prediction, to be quite honest with you. I'm not saying they're going to go and blow out OKC, but I wouldn't be surprised if they win tomorrow, you know, and then go back to Oklahoma City and lose in Game Six.
Their resolve and their mettle are going to be tested for the world to see. Unfortunately, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant, Steven Adams, and Serge Ibaka are there, and they're the ultimate roadblocks. And Deion Waiters and Roberson and whatever, whoever else too. But
right.
It just seems that it's this sad reality. I think this is over.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I mean, you know, just basically what we've seen for the last two games. I don't blame you for thinking that, Kevin. I really don't.
It's the fiance that never didn't get to walk the aisle. It's done.
So to ask that question again, do you think this is a successful season? You know what? You have to say yeah. Just because 73 is 73, man. The stuff that they were doing all season long, like, that wasn't a fluke. And yes,
Calvin,
hold on a second. Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead.
Calvin, I hate to cut you off, but I have to disagree because this is sports. Set all the records you want, New England Patriots, Carolina Panthers, Indianapolis Colts, Washington, or whoever, Detroit Red Wings, everybody, Colorado Avalanche, you name it, you name it. It's not a success if you fail at your goal. The goal for Oklahoma City was A, to record set, and B, defend whoever was in their way, because they had those critics saying, oh, listen, you got lucky because X amount of people were injured. If so-and-so were back, you wouldn't have got out the West. And if so-and-so were still playing, you wouldn't have beaten Cleveland. Now look what happens. Record-setting season. Fantastic. But, oh, guess who's back? Durant is healed. And Westbrook is angry. You failed at your goal. How is that a success?
Okay, and that's the problem of why what's happening with Golden State right now is they're allowing all these critics to come and say, you see? You see? You know? But... But why I say it's a success because again they won 73 games. You I know you're using the Patriots as an example, but the Patriots went 18-0. It's they didn't win the Super Bowl, but in the grand scheme of things, Kevin, they went 18-0 at one point. Like you can't look at that and be like, well, who cares? Throw them in the same pool as the 76ers. You know what I mean? Like they got to get credit for something. Yeah, they may not ultimately get to the top of the totem pole again, you know, and defend the title. But you can't say this season was a horrendous season.
I'm not going to say it was horrendous, Calvin. But I'll ask you this: from the onset of the season, what was their goal? Was it to win 73? Was that the goal, and then just fizzle out?
No, it's to win the championship.
Their goal was to win the championship and defend. But if they are unable to do that, the season is a failure. It should be in their eyes. It's cutthroat. I understand.
No, I know that, and it is sports. Now, you know, and that's the same. But it's funny. It's the same argument people use for like, you know, saying you know Charles Barkley was overrated because he didn't win a ring. You know what I mean? Like it's the same kind of argument, right? Like it's. You have to take success in something at this point, right? At least for those guys. So I mean, yeah, like it's still a shock to me that this is happening with them. Excuse me. At the end of the day, you know, they could take solace in something. Like it's man, they did something that at least for the regular season that no team has ever done. They got to be proud of that, regardless of what happens in the playoffs. They at least have to be proud of that.
I'm sure they care.
Yeah. And so that's why I'm like, I don't know if it's a totally throwaway season. Like in all other cases, I would say I would 100% agree with you. But the fact that they lost 9 games, Kevin, this whole season, I'm like, man, you know, they still got to pat themselves on the back for that one. You know, but at the same time, too, we got to give props to OKC just for the simple fact that people want to say that, you know, we don't know how healthy Steph Curry is, but I don't like using excuses like that in the playoffs just because everybody's nicked up at, you know, at this sport, like you look to hockey, everybody's got some sort of injuries in the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, when you roll in this deep at this stage of the season now, everybody's nicked up at some point. If you're on the court, if you can walk and you can chew gum, you can play. You know, that's the motto. So if Steph and the thing with Steph Curry is like, yeah, he might not be 100%, but nobody was complaining about that. Nobody's looking at his knee when he dropped 15 points in 2 minutes in game two. You know, nobody was looking at his knee when he dropped 17, you know, out of 21 points in overtime against Portland, right?
Well, maybe you should take a trip to Miami and work out with Dwayne Wade for a little.
Hey, what are you trying to say, Kev? What are you trying to say?
I said it. I said it. Maybe he should. Steph will come in and drop 60. No one will be the wiser. Be perfect. Now, question. Calvin, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
Is Golden State finished, be it in 6, 7, whatever, do you think they're done?
Yes, but what the only thing I'll add to that is if there's any team that can come back from this deficit out of anybody in this league, I would choose them. But yeah, I think they're done.
Any team? You wouldn't put Oklahoma City in that same boat?
If they're down 3-1, no, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't. Huh. I would not.
probably don't have to because they're up 3-1.
Exactly. But here, sorry, I'll just add this part too. Yeah, Draymond Green has got a – he's taken his beating and is deservedly so. You realize, Kevin, this guy is 2-for-16 in his last two games. He's got 10 turnovers and 2 field goals made.
But 2-for-2 in the groin.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, he's batting 1,000 somewhere, so that's good.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, he gets it through the uprights. But do you think there's something going on there, an injury of some sort?
For who? For Draymond Green, or I mean, for his foot? What is Stephen Adams? No. What is Stephen Adams' coca looks made out of?
His feet are fine. Don't worry. But what would you attribute such a poor performance to?
The funny thing is, when they put that lineup of death out there, and he's playing the five, and he's basically being a point forward, usually he's being guarded by somebody that can't keep up with him, right? Whether it's a smaller guy, you know, he can just bogart him, in certain aspects. And if it's a bigger guy, like he was doing to Steven Adams and them in game one, he's basically going right by them, right? But I think they kind of figured him out too, in a sense, because as I said before, when they go small, you know, somebody like Serge Ibaka can stay with him. And if he switches off with Kevin Durant, guess what? Kevin Durant can stay with him too. And if Kevin Durant or Roberson, you know, switches over to somebody like a Draymond Green, here comes Serge Ibaka coming from the weak side to help. So that whole thing's been frustrating for him. You know what I mean? So I think that's playing on him more than anything else, that he's not having free reign, you know, and controlling tempo like he's had basically this whole season. So that's the part that he's at home trying to figure out right now. But like I said, to me, like him, Steph Curry in a sense too, because even Steph Curry, he's gone 13-for-37 and he's getting exposed on defense, you know, by Westbrook. Like having him guard Westbrook I can't believe they've kept him on for long periods of time at that, because I mean, Westbrook is the most physically imposing point guard in the NBA. You know, I don't want to say he's the most physically point guard we've ever seen, because, you know, there's guys like Magic Johnson and Oscar Robertson and all those people like that. But, you know, he's the most physically imposing guard that's in the league today. He's way too big and strong and fast and he's too much everything physically for somebody like Curry to check for 4 quarters, especially when he's not 100%. And he's still got to give you everything on offense. That's too much to ask for anybody.
In regards, I understand what you're saying. In regards to Draymond Green, what's his natural position?
I don't think he has a position. I just think he's a basketball player.
Okay. Be that as it may, if you play him at the five, and if with this successful lineup of death and it doesn't work, and suddenly he's being exposed and he can't grab the rebounds and he's getting frustrated, whatever. Shouldn't that be up to the coach to make the adjustment and be like, well, okay, we're not playing you at the five anymore. We're not going to play you at this position anymore. We're going to move you to this position, and let's get somebody else inserted here to combat what's going on. If you're going to keep rolling out with the same lineup that's yielding negative results, isn't that the definition of insanity?
Well,
repeating the same behavior, expecting a different result. Oh, we lost by 40. We lost by 40 again. Let's try it one more time.
Well, here's what I'll say to that, though, too, is every time you look in, especially these last two games, every time OKC has gone on a run, Golden State's MO this whole year is just to play fast. They basically changed the culture of the NBA the last couple of years. They're the new Phoenix Suns, but improved, right? From 5-10 years ago, or whatever Phoenix was hot with.
The D'Antoni years, yeah.
Yeah, the D'Antoni years and what have you. But, yeah, so going back to that, they basically changed the culture of how offenses should be run in the league, right? But the problem is, every time OKC has gone on a run and they start getting hot, I think Golden State accelerates their run by taking quick shots. So at certain points, even though it's a departure from what they normally do, if at certain points they basically work the shot clock and try to get a good shot, it probably does more to break the OKC's energy in their run, right? Because if you notice, every time, you know, Durant would get a basket, you know, Golden State will get a shot up in like 4 seconds. They'd miss, another fast break will come. Boom, they score. They try to get another quick shot. They miss again. Another fast break will come. Boom. All of a sudden, they're down 18. Like, if like especially the last game, like every time I kept looking at OKC make their run, it was because Golden State just kept accelerating the point by missing quick shots. You know what I mean? And a lot of times when they're taking these shots, there's nobody in the paint to grab a rebound. So it's almost like a head start every single time.
I agree.
You know, so and I think part of that is coaching. You know, and I'm not saying that Steve Kerr didn't tell these guys this. You know, maybe he did. Who knows, right? You know, even though they are mic'd up during the game, we're not getting everything that they say for all 48 minutes, right? But at certain points, they needed to slow the game down, or at least try to slow it down a little bit, just to change the energy of that run. But they just kept reverting to what they've known this whole season, which in a sense, I guess I don't blame, because, you know, your ego kind of swells up a little bit when, again, you've won 73 games, you're the back-to-back champion, and you're the toast of the league. You know, it's hard for them. I think it's at this point, it's hard for them to put it back in reverse a little bit.
Not back-to-back champions yet, Calvin.
Even with that said, they're still the champions, right? So that's and they've been kicking everybody's ass pretty much this whole season. So that's the mentality that they have. I'm just saying that in those runs, you can see where their ego kicks in. Well, you know, Steph Curry's going to hit a 30-footer. He's going to hit two shots. He's going to get back in it. We're going to be okay. Because even yesterday's game, Klay Thompson, when he got hot, he hit 19 in a row. You know, beautiful. He got 19 points in a row. So I think a lot of people started thinking, well, once it got to 8 points, well, once Steph Curry sees a few shots going, now OKC's in trouble. But once Klay got his fourth foul and he sat out, and then they started trying to do the quick shot thing again, and then OKC all of a sudden just started getting their bearings again, then all of a sudden it was back to being a 20-point lead.
I honestly think if you're able to come up with this summary and diagnose the problem, if Golden State fails to make any such adjustment tomorrow, mm-hmm. I will nominate you to be the new head coach of the Golden State Warriors, or at least throw your hat into the coaching basket.
I'll take it.
Why not? Because Derek Fisher's still getting $5 million. Why don't you go get a couple of mil too?
Hey.
They're just if you're able to diagnose this problem, you're able to easily you figured it out, and they can't, as defending champions with all that tape, all those resources, that you're being blown out by over 25 points on national television, hanging your head and sulking, forget it. The must win was Tuesday in Oklahoma City. This series is done. It's sad to say, because I really wanted the whole story and everything, and I wanted to see that title celebration and putting it in everybody's face. But I'm
but that's why they play the game. It is what it is, man. Like the results don't lie here, man. Like even though this seems like an optical illusion from what we're watching right now, it is reality, right? So it's up to Golden State to adjust at this point. You know,
it's too late, Calvin.
Yeah, but again, I don't want to say you can never say never, but I'm just being ultimately positive. Like I said, again, I almost expect Golden State to win game five. I can't speak for game six, but I can only speak for game five. I think being in that home crowd, I can see them coming back and winning. But again, after that going forward, I don't know. Who knows?
Just to bring things a little bit closer to home, then, speaking about home crowds and everything, do you think the Raptors have a chance?
No.
So the Bismack Biyombo audition is over? That's it?
Hey, and you know what? Shout out to Bismack Biyombo. That is a great story right there, Kevin, because I don't want to say he was almost out of the league, but he wasn't really getting much offers. And I mean, and you can tell because he only got a $6 million deal over the course of 2 years. And Masai threw him a bone by giving him a player option. And now he's wildly overplayed that to the point where he's probably going to get what Tristan got. At least, I don't know about the years, but he's going to get at least 15 to 16 mil from somebody this year. And I think it was game three in the Canadian broadcast, Jack Armstrong mentioned that we're looking at possibly the next, you know, he reminds him a lot of Ben Wallace. And at first I kind of dismissed it, but after a few minutes of thinking it over, I'm like, you know what? It's not really a bad comparison, especially when you consider the age of Biyombo and the fact that even when Ben Wallace started, he started off late. He wasn't Ben Wallace right away. You know, it took him a few years before he became that a defensive behemoth, right? Even being like a 6'7", 6'8", man-child at that point, right? And I mean, we could possibly be seeing something like this because Biyombo, whatever you want to say about him, like, he's incredible on the boards. He dominates the paint. He's basically shown he can be intimidating. You know, even though he's only 6'8", he controlled the paint. Like, he basically became a breakout star, much like Tristan Thompson did last year. But I think with him, it was even more so just because he brought the physically imposing elements of blocking shots, guarding his man out to the perimeter. He's added those kind of elements to it. So I think somebody's going to pay him that money, especially with the cap going up. So all shout out to him. I would love to see Toronto re-sign him back. It would be a great story. Maybe he can give them a hometown discount, but I wouldn't blame him if he didn't, because listen, as an athlete, man, the window of your career is in everybody's dream. You would be playing 20 years in the league, but you never know how your career is going to fall. So you got to get the money that you can make.
Calvin, very interesting and very sharp point about Ben Wallace. Can I just confirm, and Tristan Thompson, can I confirm something for you, please? There's this weird phenomenon that happens in sports. I don't know if anyone's ever chronicled this kind of stuff, but I'm a little bit curious. Have you ever noticed that certain players put up career numbers when their next big free agent contract is coming up? Did Ben Wallace not basically nail it in once he got his money and went to the Chicago Bulls? Did Charlie Ward not put up record? I am an Knicks fan, people. Did Charlie Ward not put up record numbers in the season where he was set to become a free agent, and then be coincidentally just lost all motivation to become competitive once he got paid? Yeah. Buyer beware with Bismack Biyombo. Say that five times fast. But I find it's a good coincidence for the Raptors right now. But beware.
Yeah. I guess we'll see, because you never know, right? We've been fooled a lot of times with people putting out career years in their upcoming free agency season. You know, they're the last year of the contract. We've been fooled by that before. But I'm not gonna say I don't want to say that he's one of those guys, just because honestly, Kevin, he was close to being out of the league last year. So you know, and he was getting a 2-year deal with a player option that if this didn't happen, if he didn't have the year that he had, he probably would have taken up that second year.
Calvin, did Eric Dampier just figure out how to play basketball in his contract season?
Well, if you want to throw out those type of analogies, keep it in house in terms of at least in the Raptors lore. You can say the same thing about Antonio Davis back in the day, right?
Why not?
And I think he might have even said it. Once he got that big contract, you know, after a couple of years, he kind of just mailed it in, especially when he got to Chicago. After that, after he left the Raptors, like, you know, he was basically just making sure he went to the bank, you know, making sure that check cleared, you know.
So that being said, do you fall victim to the Biyombo Kool-Aid? Do you drink it up and be like, oh, stay, let's give you as much money as you want?
Because you signed Jonas to what I believe was $16 million as well. I don't think you can sign him to that kind of money to have him coming off the bench, unless you're exclusively going to play him at power forward and you're going to have a two-man lineup, which is, sorry, let me rephrase that. You're going to have a center and a power forward whose play doesn't extend all the way out to the three-point line offensively. So unless you're going to go from the departure that we keep hearing that Casey wants to, you know, he wants to kind of follow the Warriors mold. Basically, if you make Biyombo sign that kind of contract, and I mean, you got to start him, you know, at this point, you can't have him coming off the bench. So that's why I think he's most likely he's going to be gone. And if he's if he's here, it's not going to be for $15 million. It's because he took a pay cut to stay.
I hate to say it, but I think the Bismack Biyombo will be the next starting center for the New York Knicks. It just hit me when you're talking about, no, we're not going to pay him that money. He's not going to be a starting center. Has he shown that he's a starting center in this league? He's a great defensive center against Cleveland.
So do you think James Dolan is going to override his duties on Phil Jackson?
Never happened before.
Yeah.
Never happened before.
No, never seen that before, Carmelo Anthony. We never saw that before ever in the history of the Knicks. I mean, honestly, you know what? If this is not what he's going to be, that's not a bad signing, to be honest with you, Kevin. I don't think it's going to be a Jerome James situation. Sorry, I know I'm hitting below the belt here. But I don't think it's going to be a situation, Eddie Curry. It's not going to be those type of situations, you know what I mean? So I don't think you have to worry if the Knicks sign him. I think that actually would be a good deal.
And again, he's only 20, whenever the Knicks sign anybody.
And again, he's only 23 years old. So, like I said, again, all props to him. And once again, to wrap up in closing, I believe that the playoffs have just been. Have you enjoyed the playoffs? To be quite honest, because with me, I've enjoyed it in spurts and moments, but there's. I don't know what to feel like. I especially the Raptors. They've been Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You never know what you're getting. It's kind of and actually the playoffs. It hasn't been overly exciting, to be quite honest with you. If you really sit back and think of it,
I find I'm more heavily vested in the playoffs for one main reason, that Canada has a team in the playoffs.
Yeah,
and that they've advanced. Like they've broken through that glass ceiling and they can actually advance in the playoffs. Granted, they did make if Paul George needed to submit a clip, a videotape of like highlight reel material to the board in order to get in, the Raptors series already has him eligible. Dwayne Wade, if he wasn't already cemented, he is first ballot. He's going through as well.
Right.
And then you go up against LeBron, and yeah, things happen, but whatever. I'd say that I've been impressed by this playoffs. There have been a lot more, not so much on the Eastern Conference, not so much, but the path that Oklahoma City has gone through, what they've accomplished so far this postseason, I think is one of the most telling stories.
Amazing, actually.
Forgetting, was it Dallas in the first round?
Yeah.
That's a warm-up, right? They basically, Russell Westbrook danced, pregame danced over Dallas. That's fine. Beat it. But what they did to the San Antonio Spurs,
mm-hmm.
What they have been doing to the Golden State Warriors, and let's see how this story ends, because it's not over yet. Right, Calvin? Because mm-hmm. Golden State wins tomorrow. But it's not over yet.
Yeah, keep mocking me. Keep mocking me.
You'll edit me right out the podcast. But if Oklahoma City pulls off winning the championship, I think that's one of the greatest stories.
Yeah, I think so too. And
even as a third seed, it's one of the greatest underdog stories. And I would love, of all the people in the playoffs right now, I would love to see Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant hoisting a trophy. I'd love it.
Well, and I admitted this in a chat group that we're in. I actually have to admit, man, Russell Westbrook is their most important player. He's the best player on the team. Just because they're both, I mean, don't get me wrong, they're both in two of the top five players in the NBA, at worst top six, but just the energy and the psychoness that Westbrook brings every single night carries that team. And not only that, but he's found ways to kind of keep it in control, you know? So because of that, because usually he was, you know, he always had this energy. Nothing's changed, but he always played with a sense of recklessness that usually you weren't surprised when it went over the line at certain points. You know what I mean? Where he would just, you know, get on his Kobe and start shooting, you know, like 30 footers and all that stuff. Right. But the way he's controlled it in the last couple of years in terms of his recklessness and while still bringing that same energy, like he's that complete killer that I don't think Kevin Durant is quite on that level, you know.
Because I love my comic books, the one of the best comparisons I can make is that Russell Westbrook is Wolverine with the X-Men.
Mm.
Kevin Durant is Cyclops.
Hmm.
Reliable, efficient. He might have an attitude snap here and there. It might be a little bit out of character, whatever. But focus more on like Wolverine and Russell Westbrook. The comparisons are right there. Yeah. He's fine by himself. He doesn't need anybody. He'd be out in the woods fighting a bear right now if he could be, just getting himself ready in training.
And he's probably made out of adamantium.
He played like it.
He does,
right? Bradley Beal, take notes. But there's something about him. It's like, you know what? This guy is down to fight, and I don't know. He knows there are only four quarters in this game because he'll keep playing. You know what I mean?
if it went six quarters, he'd be there for all six quarters. I believe
that's,
that too.
That's Russell Westbrook. They got to tell him every game, like, look, Russell, get dressed. You got to leave. Like, the game's done, right? He won't fight until he's dead. He won't give up fighting.
I agree.
That to me is my revelation that Russell Westbrook is, and the Oklahoma City Thunder, fantastic story.
Yeah. And just to add to that, just I guess my part in closing as well is just I agree with you with OKC, because it's a great story. The fact that they're possibly going to, or more than likely at this point, going to knock off a 67-win team and a 73-win team in the same season. Just a highlight to the point to the Raptors, because the vision that Tim Lewecki and Masai Ujiri laid down about 3 years ago, we're almost ahead of schedule at this point. And the fact that they've had their best season, even though most likely they're going to lose in six, hopefully we're wrong, because if we are, then it's an even better story. But with that said, this has been a very successful season, and he can only build from there, right? So hopefully going forward, they don't take a step back. As long as they're committed to, now that they've reached the conference finals, they're not committed to, at least for the next couple of years, to just go all in at this point. And just try to see if you can, the next 4 or 5 year period, you're just trying to aim for championships and doing everything you can to do that, which in Masai we trust. You know what I mean? He's one of the best GMs in the league, and we're going to see what his value is in the next couple of years. But I'm expecting good moves at this stage. For the most part, he got rid of Bargnani, so just that alone is, gives him an A+ for life.
Hey, Calvin. Thank you. I'm a Knicks fan.
Yeah, sorry. I forgot somehow.
I'm well aware. But, Calvin, can I ask you a question?
All right. Well, we're trying to wrap up, but yeah, sure. Go ahead.
Rapid fire. Do you re-sign DeMar DeRozan to $25 million a season?
Yes, you do, just because the only way you don't is unless he really wants to leave and go back home to Los Angeles. Or unless you can get somebody that's at his caliber, in terms of, like, and when I say his caliber, meaning like he's going to be an all-star, like you're going to replace him with an all-star, I should say. I don't see why, I don't have a problem with them signing him back, just because his max is different from what a Steph Curry is going to make when he gets his max, or LeBron James or Kevin Durant. So his max is a little bit lower. And that's going to be the going rate at this point for an all-star at this stage. I mean, guys like DeAndre Jordan are making $20 million. So if he's making $25 million and he's one of the top five shooting guards in the league, I mean, it's most likely going to be the going rate in the next few years. So I don't necessarily have an issue with it. And like I said, unless you're going to replace him with somebody of his caliber or better, you're most likely going to be taking a step back. And if you're at this stage, and God forbid, I mean, the Raptors have never been in this position of thinking of championship aspirations. So to me, unless you're going to say it again, I feel like I'm Charles Barkley repeating myself over and over again. Unless you're going to be replacing him with somebody else of that caliber, and don't tell me Bradley Beal, I don't have a problem with them coming back. I just think you need to add to, you need to just basically fill some of the holes that we might have in terms of, like, solidifying a power forward, whether you want to get an elite stretch four or you want to go the Al Horford or Pau Gasol route, you know.
Rapid fire, Cal.
Yeah, I think you got to fill it out. But, I mean, we do got to go. But in closing, like, actually, not even closing, but I'd like to thank you, Kevin, for coming on to the AF today. It's been a pleasure.
Calvin, the pleasure is mine. You're on to something here. This is a fantastic pleasure and honor. I'm glad to see that your dreams are coming true.
Nah, man. Thank you so much, man. And just to shed light on something we've discussed, just to make a quick mini announcement, this summer I'm going to be launching part of South Shore Ave Radio. We're going to be launching something called The Stoop, which is going to be a series of mini pods. It's going to be one topic, you go hard on it for 15 minutes or so, and something that's going to be fun, thoughtful, intelligent, funny, and original. And it should be starting most likely after the NBA Finals, so stay tuned for that. And I'd like to give Kevin 100% props for coming up with the name, The Stoop. He was helping me select the name for it and for that concept. So The Stoop is a little bit of a play off the Ave. So it's so thank you once again for coming up with that. And, you know, we'll definitely have you on back for that for sure, as well as other future podcasts in the future.
I'm looking forward to it. Just got to talk to my agent first and work some things out. But, yeah, it's all good, Calvin.
Yeah, no problem. Making sure I give you the wrong number to your agent. on that note, for Kevin, this is Cal C. Once again, for listeners of the pod, to subscribe to the pod and the blog, go to SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, that's SouthShoreAv.com. Once again, this is Cal C, and this is the Ave Podcast on South Shore Ave Radio. Until the next pod, folks, peace. One more note before we go. I just want to add one more thing here. I'd like to send a special shout out to Joe Ward and the San Jose Sharks for making their first ever Stanley Cup final. Now, I'm not superstitious per se, but I'm going to end it on that note. I'm not going to say anything else about it for two reasons. Number one, when a pitcher's throwing a no-hitter, there's a reason why all his teammates leave him alone on the bench. And number two, like Brad Pitt said, you don't talk about Fight Club. Good night.